Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
Today we're actually wrapping up a series that I have just loved. It's a series called Tried and True. And if you're coming in at the very end, let me just kind of tell you what we've been talking about for the last few weeks. We've been doing the best we can to discover and to understand how to apply in our lives truth that we actually know is truth. We've been talking for the last few weeks about, you know, how do we know truth can be trusted? How do we know we can actually apply it in our lives? How do we know we can use it and that it can matter to us? And the reason we're having this discussion is because my assumption for just about everybody in this room is you're either here because you believe in God, or you're here because you want to believe in God, or you're interested in the things of God, and so you're asking questions about that, and that's all built around truth. You know, we always talk about how God's truth is the truth, and the reason we want that truth isn't for intellectual reasons. It's not just so that we know what the truth is, and so that should make things better. The reason we want to know the truth is because we want some certainty in our lives. We want clarity around confusing circumstances. We want peace when we don't 100% know exactly what to do. See, that's the value of truth. Knowing that something is true can allow you to trust it even when it doesn't make sense, even when you can't quite figure out what the next step is. And so what we've been doing for the last few weeks is trying to help us identify that truth, trying to help us develop a faith that can last and that can sustain in trials and in struggles and in storms and in confusions. And so if you've missed the last couple of weeks, what I would encourage you to do at some point today, if you haven't already, download our app. That's the best place to get it. You can go back and you can watch our entire series. And basically what we've been talking about for the last few weeks, we began weeks 1 and 2, and we tried to answer the question, how do we know what is true? How do we find truth? And what we talked about is there are specifically some markers that God has given us that helps us identify truth. And so for 2 weeks, we tried to discover those markers. And then for the last 3 weeks, we sort of pivoted to say, okay, we know how to find truth. We know how to identify truth. How do we actually put it into practice in our lives? How do we live it out? Because that's the value of truth. It's something that we can actually use in our lives to find that certainty, that clarity, and that peace. And so what we talked about a few weeks ago is when you actually try to live that truth out in public, when you try to live it out amongst other people, you quickly realize that not everyone agrees with you that God's truth is the truth. In fact, maybe most people you know don't agree with you that God's truth is the truth. So sometimes you're going to have, well, God's told me to do this, so I want to take this step. And your friend and your family, your neighbor, your coworker are going to say, well, God hasn't told me that, and I don't want us to do that. And so you're going to find yourselves in tension. You're going to find yourselves in conflict, find yourselves being pulled in two different directions, pulled between the direction of, okay, well, God says to do this, and pulled to the direction of where my boss says to do this, my government says to do this, my fiance wants me to do this, my girlfriend wants me to do this. And so we've been talking for the last few weeks about, okay, what happens when we find ourselves in that tension? Because most people don't like tension. Most of us want to avoid tension. But what we discovered a few weeks ago is that when it comes to this tension, this perceived difference between what we believe is true and what the world believes is true, we can't avoid it. In fact, we should lean into the tension, because as we discovered over the last few weeks, the tension is actually a test. The tension is a test for us. It's a chance for those of us that claim to believe God's truth to put it into practice in a world that disagrees, to do it kindly, to do it lovingly, to do it in a way that seeks to connect, not correct. And we do this because we've been learning for the last few weeks that testing of our faith is good. In fact, we've learned that it's only after our faith has been tested that we know our faith can be trusted. It's only after it's tested that we know we can trust it. And as we've been talking about, we want a trusted faith. We want a faith that lasts. We want a faith that can go the distance, because that's the only thing that can actually provide that certainty, that clarity, and that peace despite our circumstances. And so what we've done for the last few weeks is we've actually traveled back in time to 600 BC, and we've been studying some men who found themselves in tension. A guy named Daniel and his friends Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were Jewish men who had been captured by the Babylonian Empire. They've been taken back to Babylon and put into service in the Babylonian government. This was a very normal practice for the Babylonians. It was a way to assimilate new cultures into their empire. And so we've been studying them because these are men who loved God. But they found themselves in a world that knew nothing of their God. And they're the ones who taught us that the tension is a test. And if you were here last week, they also taught us that it is the fire that refines. Now, what that means is sometimes when we find ourselves in tension, when we find ourselves butting up against something in the world that doesn't agree with us, sometimes we can just have conversations and it works and they let us obey our God. But sometimes obeying might cost us something. Following God might have some consequences on earth, some consequences here and now. And what we learned last week is we shouldn't try to lessen those consequences. We shouldn't try to avoid those consequences. We should embrace those consequences. Because it's in those consequences that Jesus actually can grow our faith even more, can steal our faith, and can shape us into the men and women that he wants us to be. So not only should we embrace the idea that the tension is a test, it's okay to understand that the fire refines. Sometimes the world's not going to agree with us. There's going to be conflict. There's going to be consequences, and we lean in. And what I'd like to do today is I'd like to return back to Daniel. I'd like to return back to his friends because I believe there is one more lesson that we can learn from their time in exile. There's one more lesson we can learn from their time in captivity. And this time we're going to actually fast forward a little bit in Daniel's life. He is no longer bound to the Babylonian Empire because the Babylonian Empire has fallen. The Babylonian Empire falls to the Persian Empire. And the Persian's empire is led by a man named Darius the Mede. And he is now the new king over all the land. The Persian empire is even bigger than the Babylonian empire. Daniel, if you remember from the last couple of weeks, if you've been here, Daniel had experienced great success in government. He was well-regarded. He was well-liked. Well, he's continued to climb that corporate ladder. And where we find Daniel today, Darius is about to put him in charge of the entire empire. That's what a good job Daniel has done. And so the other men that were in the inner circle of King Darius did not like that. They resented Daniel. They didn't like Daniel. And they actually wanted to try to find a way to get rid of Daniel. So today we find ourselves with Daniel being openly attacked by people who are against what he believes God wants them to do. They are against him. They are actively trying to hurt him. And I believe we can learn from him how we as well should live in a world that sometimes may not agree with us. Now, if you were here last week, we're going to do the same thing we did last week. I want to tell you the whole story. I want to tell you Daniel's whole story. And then we're going to step back, and I'm going to say what I believe God would want all of us in the room who are seeking truth, all of us in this room who are trying to find something we can actually cling to and base our lives on. I believe God has a lesson for each one of us today. So if you have your Bibles, you can turn to Daniel chapter 6. That's where we'll be, Daniel chapter 6. If not, we're going to be here on the screen. But remember, Daniel's experienced great success. Darius is about to put him in charge of everything. And there's some men in the inner circle who are jealous about that. And so they get together, and that's where we pick up the story. The other administrators and high officers began searching for some fault in the way Daniel was handling government affairs. But they couldn't find anything to criticize or condemn. They start looking around, they start asking questions, but they can't find anything Daniel's doing wrong. In fact, here's what we know. He was faithful, always responsible, and completely trustworthy. Now, in case you miss this is Daniel talking about himself, which is a little funny. You know, I mean, I'm sure the Holy Spirit led him to write this down. But I hope when he wrote it down, he was like, I wish I didn't have to write this down. People are going to make fun of me forever. You know. But other side note, wouldn't it be amazing if this was what people said about us that claim Jesus as our Savior? Wouldn't it be amazing if our friends and our family, our neighbors and our coworkers, when they talked about us, they simply said, he's faithful. She's always responsible. She's completely trustworthy. Wouldn't that be great? Well, so that's what was true of Daniel. And so they look at it and they're like, well, there's nothing we can catch him in. So here's where they go. Here's what they decide. So they concluded our only chance of finding grounds for accusing Daniel will be in connection with the rules of his religion. Daniel did not hide the fact that he loved God. Daniel did not hide the fact that he followed God. And so they knew this is our way to attack him. So they devised a plan, and here's what they did. So the administrators and high officers went to the king and said, long live King Darius. A bunch of dudes walk into the boss's office and start telling him how great he is. Hey, bosses, if that happens to you, be wary. If a bunch of employees come in and said, man, you look great today. Or if you lost some weight, you are looking good. Have I told you lately you're the best boss in the whole wide world? Who's the best boss? You're the best boss. That's exactly what happened. And so Darius is like, I am the best boss. You're right. So they keep going. We are all in agreement. We, administrators, officials, high officers, advisors, and governors, that the king should make a law that will be strictly enforced. King, you look amazing today. And we have an idea for a new rule you should enforce very strictly. If your employees ever tell you to enforce a rule very strictly, it's because they don't struggle with the rule. It's like somebody coming and just suggesting, I think we should rule that no tuna sandwiches in the break room. You know, those are people who can't stand the smell of tuna. And so they get to them and they say, hey, we have this great idea for this great law, this great rule. It's going to be amazing. Here it is. Give orders that for the next 30 days, any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except to you, your majesty, will be thrown into the den of lions. King, we were just thinking, you're great. You deserved a month of being great. We're going to call it King Appreciation Month. And for King Appreciation Month, nobody can pray to anybody but you because you're the best. But remember, if anybody does pray to anybody but you, what are we going to do? We're going to throw them in that lion's den. You've been asking, why do we have those lions? This is why we have those lions, so we can throw them in the lion's den. And then just to make sure you can't back out of it, they add one more thing. And now, your majesty, issue and sign this law so it cannot be changed. An official law of the Medes and Persians, that it cannot be revoked. So King Darius signed the law. He was like, well, this sounds great. Nobody's going to be crazy enough to disobey it. People are going to be praying to me for a month. That's awesome, man. So he signs the law. Now, this was a law aimed at one person. This was a law aimed at Daniel. This was a law aimed at taking him down because of his faith. The government and all its resources has turned its lasers on him and was trying to take him down. So what do we think Daniel did? Well, naturally, he called a press conference and he talked about how he was going to start a new political party that was going to raise money so that they could take down this evil government and put their own form of government in, right? No, that's not what he did at all. But when Daniel learned that the law had been signed, he went home, knelt down as usual in his upstairs room with its window open towards Jerusalem. He heard the law, and he went home. And he opened his window like he always done. He gathered his knees like he always done, and he prayed like he'd always done. In fact, watch this. He prayed three times a day, just like he had always done, giving thanks to his God. Nothing changed. Law is passed, going to be thrown into a lion's den. Daniel's like, well, that's a bummer. All right, better go pray. And he goes home, and he prays to his Heavenly Father. In fact, it's while he's praying that he's caught. Watch this. Then the officials went together to Daniel's house and found him praying and asking for God's help. See, I love the fact that Daniel wrote this so we know what Daniel was praying. Daniel wasn't just praying open, kind of mindful prayers. Daniel was praying, please help me, God, because I prefer not to be lion food. But I'm going to obey you, and I'm going to trust you. And these men, they see Daniel, they catch him, and here's what happens. They go to King Darius, and they say, hey, bad news. Somebody broke that rule we passed. It was Daniel. And immediately, Darius knows he's been tricked because he loved Daniel. And he looks at these men, and he realizes they've played him. But unfortunately, he signed the rule into law. Even he couldn't change it. And so he spends some time trying to figure out if there's any way he can get Daniel out of this, but he can't. They got him. They tricked him. And so here's what happens a few verses later. So at last the king gave orders for Daniel to be arrested and thrown into the den of lions. And the king said to him, watch this, may your God, whom you serve so faithfully, rescue you. Now, this guy had just proclaimed a law saying he was God, saying no one could pray to anybody but him. But in this moment, he's like, oh, Daniel, I hope your God comes through. I hope your God's a good God. I hope your God's better than my God. Because he was really concerned about this. Watch. He was so concerned. Watch. So a stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den. The king sealed the stone with his own royal seal and the seals of his nobles so that no one could rescue David. He had to make sure he had to follow the rules, sealed it, no one could rescue him. And then watch what the king does. Then the king returned to the palace and spent the night fasting. He refused his usual entertainment and couldn't sleep at all that night. I've always wondered, I wonder who he prayed to while he was fasting. Think he prayed to himself? Dear me, please protect Daniel. I don't think he did. I think maybe he prayed to somebody else. Very early the next morning, the king got up and hurried out to the lion's den. He was passionate about this. He was concerned about Daniel. So he hurries out to the lion's den. He gets there. And when he got there, he called out in anguish, Daniel, servant of the living God. Now he's the living God. Was your God, who you serve so faithfully, able to rescue you from the lions? Because I couldn't. And I labeled myself a God. I could do nothing for you. Was your God better than me? Was your God able to save you? Was your God able to rescue you? And Daniel speaks. Daniel answered, long live the king. My God sent his angel to shut the lions' mouths so they would not hurt me, for I have been found innocent in his sight, and I have not wronged you, your majesty. Let's keep going. The king was overjoyed and ordered that Daniel be lifted from the den. Not a scratch was found on him, for he had trusted in his God. Now, if you were here last week and you heard the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, three men who were ordered to worship an idol, they disobeyed. They were thrown into a fiery furnace. Jesus joined them there and saved them. You would be forgiven for thinking, well, this is the same story. It's the same lesson. Daniel had a rule that was going to be punishable by death. Daniel chose to obey his God rather than obey the government. He was sentenced to death, and God rescued him in that moment. And you would be correct. That is what happened. But I believe both stories are included in the book of Daniel for very different reasons. And I believe the lesson that we can learn from Daniel's life is crucial to developing a faith that can actually last us for the rest of our lives. Because if you recall, if you remember what we've learned from these stories, we've learned that the tension is a test. Daniel knew this. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego knew this. Daniel knew this when he didn't fight back at the rule. He didn't protest the rule. He didn't boycott the rule. He just went to his house and obeyed his God. We learned last week that the fire refines. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were thrown into the fire. Jesus showed up and he rescued them. He takes them out of the fire. See, that's not exactly what happens to Daniel. Remember what we read? It was in the afternoon to evening, and he's lowered into the den. They place a stone over the top, and they seal it. And Daniel is left there, alone and in the dark. But actually, that's not true. He's not alone. He's surrounded by this sound. Can you imagine the darkness of that night? Can you imagine how hard Daniel prayed? Can you imagine how much he hoped God was going to save him? Hour after hour. After hour of prayer, hour after hour after hour of rescue, it wasn't until the next morning when the stone was rolled away and he was pulled up that he was certain he would be safe. See, I think there's a lesson for us to learn from Daniel in the lion's den, and it is a lesson that is crucial if we want to develop a faith that lasts. Because not only is the tension a test? Not only does the fire refine what we learn from Daniel's night in the lion's den, what we learn about developing a faith that lasts. Because in that darkness, in that silence, something happened. Something was built in him. Something was confirmed in him. And the same will happen to us because we believe that the darkness defines. Our faith is not defined in the light. Our faith is defined in the darkness. Our faith is not defined when we can clearly see what God's up to. Our faith is defined when we have no idea what God is up to. See, if we want a faith that can last, we need a faith that can withstand the darkness. We need a faith that can withstand the confusions of life. We need a faith that can last when we don't feel God. We need a faith that can last when we don't see God. We need a faith that can last when we're going to spend all night in a dark cave surrounded by lions that want to devour us. Because here's what I'll tell you, Wellspring. If you don't have a faith that can withstand the darkness, you don't have a faith that will last. If your truth can't overcome the darkness, your truth cannot and should not be trusted. That, to me, is the lesson from Daniel in the lion's den. And it's a lesson that carries on into the New Testament. It's a message Jesus himself teaches. It's a message that his disciples teach. It's a message carried out from the early church. And it's nowhere clearly, more clearly stated than in the book of Hebrews, which was a letter to people trying to figure out if their faith could be trusted, if they could really trust the truth of what they've heard about Jesus. And in Hebrews chapter 11, the writer paints this perfect picture for us about what this faith actually looks like. Here's what he says. He says, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. Faith isn't confidence of what we see. Faith is confidence in what we cannot see. Faith is confidence in what we cannot feel. Faith is confident in what we cannot possibly figure out on our own. What Daniel and that lion's den had was faith that his God was good and that his God was going to be there even when he couldn't see it, even when he couldn't feel it. And it wasn't faith built on circumstances. It wasn't faith built on, all right, God, you better. All right, God, if only. All right, God, we'll win you. No. Daniel had a faith that could survive the darkness because he had confidence and assurance in something he could not see. I imagine him in that pit just praying, probably harder than he had ever prayed in his life. God, I know you're going to rescue me. God, I know you're going to save me. God, I think that rock's going to move. I think the king's going to come now. Okay, you weren't ready to save me yet. That's okay. But God, I have faith. I believe you're going to save me in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, not yet either. That's good. All right, I trust you. Okay, but God, I want you to protect me. These lions are getting, okay, God, there's a lion breathing on the back of my neck. He's really close, God. It'd be really great. He's licking my face. That'd be really great, God, if you would stop. God, I think he wants me to pet him. Okay, all right, I'm going to pet the lion. That's a lion. That's a big lion, God. They're all coming. Group hug. Okay, all right, God, it'd be really great if you could rescue me out of this because this is horrifying. Can you imagine the test? Can you imagine the test Daniel went through? See, that's why we've been saying this whole time, that it's only after our faith has been tested that we know our faith can be trusted. There is nothing that'll test your faith like the darkness. The darkness of disappointment. The darkness of unmet expectations. The darkness of praying for someone to get better and they don't. The darkness of being so sure God was going to move this way and he did that instead. The darkness of believing God called you to start a business and then it fails. And you're like, God, this wasn't part of the deal. I thought success was guaranteed since you called me to do this. Believing God calls you into a relationship only to have it fall apart. What do we do in those moments? When things don't work out, do we have a faith that will last? Do we have a faith that can survive despite the circumstances of life? Or is our faith conditional upon the circumstances of life? Because I'm telling you right now, a faith conditional on circumstances is not a faith that will last. It is not a truth worth trusting. So where did Daniel get the faith? Where did Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego get the faith? Where do you get the faith? Where do I get the faith? Where do we get this faith? Where do we find this truth that can last? Well, it's in the person that we talk about every week at this church. It's in the person we sing to. And his name is Jesus. And he alone, is truth worth trusting. And rather than trying to convince you, I'm going to let him explain why. See, the last night he spent with his disciples before he was arrested and handed over to the Romans and eventually crucified, he said a lot of stuff to his disciples, and they were so smart, they wrote it down so that almost 2,000 years later, we can read what he said. And one of the things he did that night was prepare them for what was coming. And he was talking directly to his disciples, but what we believe is that he was speaking through his disciples to us. And so we can read these words, and they're relevant for us today. And so here's what he says to you today. I have told you all this. Now, in context, he's talking to his disciples, and he's told them about what's about to happen. But see, here's what I know about Jesus. Everything we know about God comes from him. Everything we know from the Old Testament comes from him. Everything we know from the New Testament comes from him. All of the stories. So for me, when Jesus looks to us and says, I have told you all this, what he means is, I have told you the stories of Daniel and the cupbearer. I have told you the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and the fiery furnace. I have told you the story of Daniel and the lion's den. I have told you all these stories. In fact, Jesus would say, I have told you everything you know about me. If you've ever read any of the Old Testament, the stories of the men and women of faith who helped me as I began to try to establish a nation so I could launch my rescue mission. If you've ever read any of the New Testament and you've seen the men and women that followed me, the men and women who learned from me, you've seen the miracles I did. If you've ever read about the spread of the early church, if you've ever read any of the training manuals, all the things you've read, all the things you've heard, Jesus says, I have told you all of this. I told you how the world began. I told you how it fell. I told you about me and Dad's rescue mission. I told you how it was going to work. I showed you what would happen if you obeyed me. I showed you what would happen if you didn't obey me. I told you what was going to happen at the end. I told you about eternity. I told you about how even though you feel like life on earth is forever, there's a life waiting for you with me forever. And thought about it that way, our life here is going to be just a blink of an eye. I told you all of this. I told you everything that has happened, that is happening, and will happen. I told you all of this. Why? So that you may have peace in me. Jesus says, I've told you everything that's ever happened, everything that's going to happen. I've told you all of this so that you can know that my truth can be trusted. So if you're trying to decide what you're going to hitch your wagon to, what you're going to place your hope in, what you're going to say, this is the thing I'm going to attach my life to. This is the thing I'm going to let guide me. This is the thing I'm going to direct me. Jesus is saying, that's why I told you all this. I told you all this so that you can put your trust in me, so that you can be certain that I am a truth that can be trusted. I have told you all this so that in the darkness, you can define your faith by me. You can still choose to trust me. You can still choose to follow me. You can still choose to love me. That is why I've told you all this. And it's very important, Jesus would say, that you choose me, that you trust me, that you place your hope in me. Why, Jesus? Here's what he says. He says, because here on earth, you will have many trials and sorrows. Here on earth, circumstances will go bad. Here on earth, your best plans will sometimes fall apart in your face. Here on earth, your businesses will sometimes fail. Here on earth, you will make bad choices. Here on earth, things will not always work out. And so if you place your hope, if you build your life around the truth that if I follow God, I'm also going to have success in business, or if I follow God, I'm going to have success in family, or I'm going to have success in marriage, and nothing's ever going to go wrong, and no one's ever going to get sick, and nothing bad is ever going to happen, and there will be no tragedies, Jesus is saying, whoa, no. I've told you all this. I've told you that's coming. And I told you that so that you can have peace in me. And only me. If you try to make it God plus success, It's not going to work. Because here on earth, you're going to have many trials and sorrows. And if you begin to equate your success at work with your relationship with me, it'll all crumble to the ground. Because I'm telling you, here on earth, there will be many trials and sorrows. Have you not read the stories of the people before I came and what their lives looked like as they followed me? Or have you not read the stories of the people after I came and what their lives looked like as they followed me? In any of that, where do you get? Follow Jesus and everything works out. Follow Jesus and I never get sick. Follow Jesus and my business will work. That's not a promise. That's a lie. And if you believe it, you will be disappointed. And your faith will crumble at the very moment you need it the worst, in the tension, in the fire, and in the darkness. And Jesus says, you don't have to. That's why I'm here. That's why I have told you all of this. That's why I've made it so clear, so that you can have peace in me. Even though on this earth there will be trials and sorrows. And then he adds this, but take heart, because I have overcome the world. See, Jesus didn't just say this, he did it. He walked out of this meal, was arrested by the Jewish temple guard, then handed over to the Roman government, beaten, nailed to a cross, died. Took the penalty, in fact, for every mistake you and I have ever committed once for all time to reconnect us to our Heavenly Father. Then on Sunday morning, Jesus came back to life. Not figuratively, but literally, physically. Came back to life, walked out of the grave. And the truth of that moment is the truth we can cling to in the tension. It's the truth we can cling to in the fire. It's the truth we can and must cling to in the darkness. It is the truth that sparked a movement that changed the world. It is a truth that changed disciples. It is a truth that changed nations. And it is the truth that can change us. From the beginning of Christianity, from the launch of that movement, one thing has been true. The tomb is empty. He walked out of it. And for thousands of years, people have tried to disprove that, starting at the very beginning, but never once. Not once could the Jewish leaders, could the Roman government ever prove that the tomb wasn't empty. You know why they couldn't prove it? Because it was. And if the tomb is empty, Jesus literally, physically came back to life. And if he literally, physically came back to life, that means he overcame the world, which means we can take heart. We can put our faith in him. We can trust in him in the trials, in the sorrows. We can find peace because he told us all of this. When the marriage crumbles, you can say, God, I'm going to do everything I can to rescue that marriage, but I love you and I trust you to be with me in this moment. When our business fails, God, I'm going to do everything I can to rescue that business, but I love you and I trust you and I know that you are with me no matter what. When we get sick, when a family member gets sick, God, I'm going to pray for healing with all I have. But I trust in this moment that you are with me and for me and that you have overcome the world. And I trust it because the tomb is empty. And if the tomb is empty, you've overcome. And if you've overcome, I can find peace in you because of all you've said. So if your hope, if your truth is tethered to anything other than Jesus, I just tell you, if it hasn't already, it will let you down. It will crumble under the weight of tension. It will crumble under the heat of fire. And it will be desperately insufficient in the darkness. Which is why Jesus says, I'm here. And you can trust in me. You can build your life on me. I am a truth that can be trusted. Because I told you all this. I told you it was coming. I told you that the tension, it's a test. It's a test for you. It's a test to build your faith that I'm going to be with you in the tension, and I'm going to give you guidance in the tension, and I'm going to give you strength and courage in the tension. I'm going to be with you in the tension. And when obedience costs you something, I'm telling you, the fire, it's going to refine you. I'm going to be with you in that fire. Don't flee that fire. That fire is what I'm going to use to break out addiction in you. That fire is what I'm going to use to rekindle the flames of your marriage. That fire is what I'm going to use to turn you into the father or mother you've always wanted to be. That fire is what I'm going to use to prepare you for the next 20 years of your life. You have no idea what I have planned for your life. I just need you to trust me in it. And it's not a blind trust. The tomb's still empty. Go check. I walked out 2,000 years ago and no one's ever been able to disprove it. That's why they don't try. They attack other parts of Christianity, but they can't attack the fact that Jesus died, he was buried, and the next day the tomb was empty and no one's ever found the body. Because he walked out. And he started the movement that changed the world. So he says, you can trust me in the tension. You can trust me in the fire, and you can trust me because the darkness defines. You can trust me even when you can't find me. You can trust me even when you can't see me. You can trust me even when it doesn't make sense what's happening. You can trust me when everything else around you crumbles, when everything else makes sense. Remember, I told you all of this so that you could have peace in me. Because here on earth, you will have many trials and sorrows. But take heart. Because I have overcome the world. And you know what he means? He says, and if you believe in me, if you join me, if you place your faith in me, we will overcome together. We built this series on a simple question. How do we find truth that can be trusted? Here's the answer. Truth that has been tested by tension, refined by fire, and defined in darkness is the only one worth trusting. And let me help you. That truth has a name, and his name is Jesus. Nothing else can stand up to the tension. Nothing else can survive the fire, and nothing else can speak in the darkness. So it's crucial for those of us who truly want to find a faith that lasts, for those of us who truly want to understand truth that can be trusted, that we lean in today. And we accept that that truth, that hope, that faith can only be found and only be placed and only be reciprocated in Jesus. He is the only one worthy of our hope. And if the truth you're clinging to cannot stand up to the testing of tension, the refining of fire, and the defining of darkness, throw it away. And try something better. And this is better. And it's not just better for us. Here's the amazing thing about this truth. And the amazing thing that happens when we embrace it. Our eyes are opened and we begin to join Jesus in his rescue mission. Because not only is this truth the best thing for us, here's what I know for fact. It is the only thing that can change the world. Let me pray. God, we just love you so much. We thank you for your son. We thank you for his undeniable truth. I pray today, Father, that you will draw our hearts to your truth, that you will remove everything else in our lives, and that you will show us the tension, the testing is there for us. Because if our truth can't stand up to tension, we probably shouldn't trust it. You can. We thank you for the fire. Because if our truth can't withstand the flames, it's probably not your truth. So remove it. Refine our faith and tie it more to you. And God, we thank you for the darkness. We thank you for the moments where we can't see. Because we know it is in those moments where we truly define for ourselves what we believe. We define for ourselves what our hope really is in. And Father, may I hope always be in you, in your Son, and in the empty tomb. May we never forget you brought him back to life as a promise to us. And may that promise and that power sustain us in the darkest moments as you prove that your truth truly can be trusted. We love you. It's in your son's amazing and holy name we pray.